This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
The Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM KMOX.
The pitch. Nootbaar swings and he drives it to center field. That's hit back to the track, the wall. It's a goner. A three-run homer for Lars Nootbaar. 3-1 Cardinals in the fifth inning.
Yo, Paulie.
Paulie's a great name.
Yo, Paulie.
What'd you do for Paulie? Anything?
Me, Paulie. I was responsible.
Paulie, we're here because of you.
Oh, boy. The Cardinals win a series against the Houston Astros, and now they are in New York to take on the Mets. In a series that begins tonight, we have the first pitch at 6:10. Our next guest has the pregame show at 5:15. It is Matt Pauly, the host of Sports Open Line. The Redbird Rush Hour, which is at 5 o'clock every weekday, as long as the Cardinals don't interfere. And it will a little bit tonight. So, Matt Pauly, I'm assuming you have 15 minutes of an extended pregame, basically, a 15-minute Redbird Rush Hour?
Yeah, you know what? That's a good question because we really don't start that show until after the traffic at 5:10. So I don't think we'll have much of anything tonight.
Oh, okay. Well, let's just assume that Cardinals baseball stuff starts a little after 5. How about that?
Yeah, just go with that. That works.
Big hit for Lars Nootbaar yesterday. Cards needed that one, and they have been offensively, if you just look at the numbers, Matt, with the exception of the power numbers, and I know that was a home run, they've been a pretty good offense. They've been one of the top 5 offenses so far in baseball.
Yeah, so two things. First off, I love the way that inning played out because it starts with a Victor Scott the second bunt, and then Thomas Ajayi has an incredible at-bat and eventually just kind of takes, you know, gives what's given to him and just takes it the other way and off the end of the bat and drops a little single. And then that allows Lars Nootbaar to come up to the plate. And he obviously hits the 3-run home run, and that turns a 1-0 deficit into a 3-1 lead. Yeah, their numbers are good. I mean, they're hitting still .280 as a team. That is still number one in all of Major League Baseball. You mentioned the power numbers. They've got 20 home runs. You're right. That's kind of in the
average middle.
That's right in the middle. Let's see. Where is their team OPS rank? I haven't looked at that lately. Team OPS is kind of in the middle as well, it looks like. No, excuse me. They're third in team OPS. Only the Yankees and Diamondbacks have a better team OPS than the Cardinals right now.
Well, so, they have the best on-base percentage. It's them and the Padres.
Yeah. So the at 3:48, and they've got the the edge when you take the out further numbers past the decimal point. So look, the offense has been really good. It's a tiny sample size. It's still really early on in the season, but you can't argue with what they have done from an offensive standpoint.
Yeah, and we didn't really know what they would be offensively. So do you feel confident to say that this is kind of how it's going to be this year? Or do you suspect a drop-off is coming at some point?
It's going to drop off to some level. Like, I don't think, there are a number of players who have statistics that are just not sustainable. So as some of those gaudy, unsustainable numbers start to drop, the team numbers will start to drop as well. But can they be a good offensive club? Can they be an above average offensive club? Yeah, I think they can. I always thought they could. I've always liked this offensive group. That was something that I was saying all off season long. It was one of the things that why I didn't understand why people were predicting this team as a fourth place team, because I looked at the lineup and I said, this is a group that severely underachieved last year offensively, and you've got too many good offensive pieces that they just have to be better than they were last year. Now, the question, and just because they've had a good 2-3 week start to the season, it doesn't change the question, how much better are they going to be this year compared to last year? So those numbers are going to come down 100% without a doubt, but I don't think that means they won't be a good offensive club.
Matt, don't you think the youth plays into the excitement of this ball club and a little bit of the unknown expectation? Meaning, if you look at these numbers and you have all of these numbers, whether it be offense, defensively, with an older lineup, more proven commodities, you wouldn't have quite the upside as you do with young guys who could still boost their own expectations because you don't know what their cap is yet.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to kind of view it, that because they're younger, there's more room to grow as opposed to a veteran group doing this and just kind of feeling like, okay, this is who they are. Mm-hmm. I've never really thought of it that way. I like that that line of thinking. I do think individually we can look at some guys and say they've got more in the tank. Like, I think what we're seeing from Lars Nootbaar, I think Lars Nootbaar can be even better. Now, Brendan Donovan, the numbers he has right now, that he's the top hitter, or I guess I haven't looked to confirm that the last day, but he was the top hitter in all of baseball going into yesterday. He's dropped. He's now third in baseball in hitting, but still, that's pretty darn good. The OPS for Nolan Arenado and the slug for Nolan Arenado, that's going to drop at some point, but that's not the kind of guy that you're talking about because he's one of the old guys, so that doesn't really matter to your question. So, I think the bottom line here on this is the fact that you've got the youngest lineup in Major League Baseball. Right now, a lot of these guys are performing at a high level, and you feel like some of these guys have not yet reached their potential.
As far as Mason Wynn goes and the injury, are we assuming that it's pretty much just going to be the 10 days when they're up, then he's back, or could it extend beyond that?
We haven't been given an update since he went on, but when if you remember, the night before he went on, he told the media, I told the trainers that I'm not going on the injured list. That was his statement, and he kind of had this feeling that it was going to be a 2 or 3 day thing. So sometimes injuries are worse than they are initially feared, and maybe they know something that they haven't told us yet. But based off what we know, I feel like Mason Wynn is going to be back, if not the day he's eligible to come back, shortly thereafter.
We should also talk about pitching here, because one of the things, if you go back a week and a half, that we were a little concerned about, it wasn't a huge problem yet, but I think, at least for me anyway, concerned about the amount of innings coming out of the starting pitching, just wasn't enough of it. But now that a week or so has gone by, they've gotten really good work out of their starters in general. Things have worked out pretty well for that unit up until, even with Steven Matz giving them five, you'd like a little more than five. But again, the guy was in the bullpen, right? So him giving them five innings is pretty good. But overall, they've been giving them innings.
Yeah, they've been getting 6-7 innings from a lot of guys here recently, and that's been, you know, just part of the ramp up that goes along with this. And because they're in a 6-man rotation, it's going to be incredibly important that they do get length out of their starters. Now, starters over the last 7 starts for the Cardinals have a sub-2 ERA. It's like it's low ones. The starter ERA over the last 7 games, it was right at 1 2 starts ago, and it went up just a little bit over the last 2 games, but not much. You know, Steven Matz yesterday, he was scheduled to throw 65 pitches. He was so good that they let him stay out there a little bit longer, and they pushed him all the way to 71, and they're really worried about health. So this is something that this team just doesn't and Oliver Marmol talked about this on the Gas House Gang earlier in the week, and I thought it was a really interesting thing that he had to say. They just don't have a whole lot of depth in the organization when it comes to starting pitching that can go out and pitch at the big league level. Right now there's one guy. It's Michael McGreevy, especially with Quinn Matthews on the injured list. There's a bunch of young prospects who are on the injured list right now. Some guys are going to be out for the year. So like they have one guy. If they really needed to get a start out of a Gordon Graceffo, I guess they could. If they really need a start out of Sim Roberts, I guess they could. But basically there's one guy in Michael McGreevy. So the Cardinals have prioritized health when it comes to starting pitching, and that's why they have taken the foot off the gas just a little bit in terms of, you know, really pushing these guys. But they are getting more and more innings out of them, and you know, for Steven Matz to go 5 and give 71 pitches yesterday, you would think they could push that to 80, 85 pitches in his next start, and then after that you're talking 95, 100, and he's just, you know, fully unleashed. And that extra day off that these guys are getting between every start is going to allow them to be able to push a little bit more each start.
You mentioned Ollie on Gas House Gang, and he's with us every Tuesday at 12. And that comment he made about what the roster is, it was sort of, I just read it differently, but when he said it, I sort of, you know, my ears perked up a little bit, because it sounded, you know, just like that, like he's saying, hey, this is the roster I have, you know. Yeah, not like he's saying, what do you want me to do about it, but it almost was, I think it was honest. He was basically saying, we have to play the guys we have. You don't, I feel anyway, Matt, like you don't typically hear managers that candid about it.
No, you don't. And that's something that I've always appreciated, and I think for some of the Marmol haters out there, they would be smart to take a step back and more closely listen to what some of the things he said. I'm glad he's doing Tuesdays too, because it's an opportunity to hear from him in a format where it's not 15 minutes after a game ended and you're still kind of in the heat of battle, if that makes sense. And he said something that I had not thought of, and I really appreciated, and this goes to just show you that, you know, these guys know what they're doing and they've got a lot of information. When we had the conversation on the Extra Inning Show and on Sports Open Line and everything, the day Eric Fetty came out with the no-hitter. Now, the no-hitter part of it, I honestly did not care about a guy being pulled with a no-hitter. But what I did care about in the moment was that he was at a pitch count where I felt like he could have come out for another inning, and that was during a period where the bullpen was really, really being overused. And a point that Ollie said on Tuesday that I just did not consider when I was having that conversation was they've been giving every single guy extra rest, and now they're going to the 6-man rotation, so it's really built in there with the extra day of rest each time through. But because of off days, every starting pitcher had been given extra rest except for Eric Fetty. That one start is the only start this year where a starting pitcher did not have that extra rest. And when they're worried about the health of these guys, not pushing somebody in that situation makes sense. So, like, that was something that I really enjoyed hearing from him on Tuesday, and something that, bluntly and honestly, I did not think through when I was talking about that after the game.
Matt, and if you could correct me if I'm wrong here, this is just how it's not a baseball take. It's probably more of a sports take. So tell me if I'm wrong. But when I see the Cardinals are going with a 6-man rotation, the explicit reason is for health, allow the guys to go further. To me, the implicit reason is our starters aren't that deep. Like, if you have 2 or 3 real bangers for starters, you're not rolling 6 guys. You're rolling 5 guys because, I mean, the bullpen's getting worn out. It's not like your starters were going that deep. And So I kind of feel like a six-man rotation is what you do if you don't have two or three real winners. But I that could be a the wrong take.
Yeah, I think you can take it either way. So if you've got, you know, two or three, if your rotation is very top-heavy and you got two or three legit dudes at the top of the rotation, the last thing that you want to do is add another guy to the rotation.
Right.
So it's, you know, you're reducing the number of starts for those top guys because you're adding an extra starter. That being said, when you add that extra day, you also give those starters the opportunity to be maybe even better. I talk about this a lot. When I was working in Milwaukee with the Brewers went to a six-man rotation the year that Corbin Burnes won the Cy Young Award. So they had Corbin Burnes, they had Brandon Woodruff, they had Freddie Peralta. They had a bunch of legit dudes at the top of the rotation, and they still went six-man rotation. Now, that wasn't far off of COVID, so that was part of so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison because they were also trying to limit what guys put on their arms coming off a season where you just weren't pitching quite as much. But what I saw from those guys that year was – they were even better because they got the extra day of rest. So I think it is a juggling act. You don't want to give less starts to top
right.
guys, but you also acknowledge the fact that an extra day of rest can make even top guys better.
Yeah, I guess, because I guess that would be my question. Are the Dodgers doing this? Are the teams with the high-paid, high-profile starters, are they rolling six men?
Not generally, no. But I do think we're going to go into, if more teams do this and it works, I think it's something that baseball is going to look at.
Matt Pauly has the pregame show at 5:15 this evening, Cardinals and Mets. 6:10 is the first pitch tonight. Matthew, thank you again. We'll talk next week.
You bet. Sounds good.
Oh, Pauly, your sister's with me. I'll call you back later. See ya.
That is the host of Sports Open Line, which, if there's not a Cardinals game at night from 6 until 8, Redbird Rush Hour starts at 5 o'clock when there's not Cardinals baseball in the way. But again, pregame show is at 5:15, Cards and Mets tonight. It's Chris and Amy on
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy!
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game, like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way, with stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster!
monster shot.
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
AMOX, the Tournament of Negligence continues. If you watched, paid attention to, listened to the Mott's Madness tournament and how that all turned out, congratulations, yeah. Alfonso's in Troy, Illinois. We screwed up. We had a bunch of oversights in that
one. Yeah, well, it was an inattention to detail.
Yeah, inattention to detail. So basically negligence, and we thought we'd celebrate with a tournament of negligence.
Great idea.
Negligent behavior, acts, you know, that sort of thing. And we even we did not do it on purpose, but we had some negligence in this tournament.
We did.
We accidentally set it up so that in the first round, after the one seed and the two seed advanced, they played each other in the next round, which is not supposed to happen.
It's not.
And in a field of 32, that shouldn't happen.
Our intrepid reporter Sean Malone pointed out our negligence.
He's not negligent.
No.
Me neither.
Yeah, but we're not reporters.
No, our KMOX newsroom, awesome.
Opposite of negligence.
And the attention to detail, they have that. We don't.
We don't.
And neither does our producer, Matt Pajeski.
That's why we're not surgeons or architects or reporters. We try, but not too hard.
Right.
Yes. You can try too hard.
I agree with you.
I think you can try too hard sometimes. You got to be natural. And being natural means, you know what? Sometimes you're going to be negligent.
So we are down to now our final four in the Tournament of Negligence after the Elite Eight matchups of this one. For example, the one seed is Forgetting Your Child is in the Car. Is a one seed, and it has been steamrolling everything.
It really has.
Forgetting Your Child in the Car easily beat No Car Insurance, not having car insurance. So Forgetting Your Child is in the Car has advanced to the next round, to the final four. It will take on Forgetting Your Birth Control, which defeated the 11 seed Taking Nursing Classes While You're the Circuit Attorney of a Major City.
Wow. Yeah. Those were really two heavyweights, birth control and nursing classes as the circuit attorney.
And Forgetting Your Birth Control won by 2/3. Like, I mean, it was it was a 3-1 vote, 2-1 vote.
Also,
I should also say here, this next matchup of Forgetting the Birth Control and Forgetting Your Child. If you don't forget one, you don't have to worry about the other.
Yeah, I mean,
think about it.
There you go. Failing to do your taxes defeated not flushing the toilet 60% to 40%. So apparently people
feel
pretty strongly about the negligence of not doing your taxes. And you want to talk about it all, a walloping.
This was a beating.
A beating. Harambe defeated not renewing your license plates.
Well, not Harambe. It was dropping your child into the gorilla pit at the zoo.
Cincinnati, R.I.P. Harambe.
Yes.
That 95% of the vote, people think Harambe or creating a Harambe situation is more negligent than not renewing your plates.
Well, that's an easy winner. I mean,
well, tell me about
allowing your kid to get into the zoo enclosure, into the lion den, or to the the gorilla pit.
John Hancock almost dropped his kid into big cat country. So failing to do your taxes will take on Harambe.
That is on our Tournament of Negligence. These are our final four. So again, it will be Forgetting Your Child is in the Car, taking on Forgetting Your Birth Control.
Wow. I don't know what to think. I have no idea what to expect in that race.
I don't either. And failing to do taxes versus dropping your child into the gorilla pit. So those are two really strong matchups in our final four in the Tournament of Negligence. So you can vote, and we need your vote. at Chris Amy KMOX on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter, by the way.
Yep.
We're fun. You can follow both of us at Amy Marks Kors and at Chris Ranji. We have personal accounts. We have our show account at Chris Amy KMOX. Follow and vote. It is time for our guy, the Chief Washington Correspondent for CBS News, Major Garrett, joins the show next.
It's Major News with Major Garrett, our weekly conversation with CBS's Chief Washington Correspondent.
Major is also the host of America Decides on CBS News 24/7, and we are joined by Major Garrett this morning. We talk to him just after 10:30 every Thursday. Major, what's up?
How is everybody in St. Louis?
Hey, we're doing okay. Yeah.
Good.
It's cold and rainy.
Yeah, and we'll just get to write it because I know you're going to ask. Very soon is the answer. Very soon is the answer.
Okay.
And so this is about, you want to tell people what it's about?
It's about the new name, the new format, and the rebirth of America Decides into something that, for those on KMOX who knew what I used to do on KMOX, will be very, very familiar.
Oh.
Well, we get a lot of emails.
And text messages.
I'm not even joking, yeah. Major, you're laughing, but you are a hit. This guy is a hit. Where's the takeout podcast? Well, he's got more news coming. You're just going to have to hang tight.
Very soon.
So, Major, the president...
Matter of fact, the furniture arrives in a week and a half.
There's furniture?
He was waiting for the couch, remember, Ranj? That's why the delay.
Yeah.
You can't have him sitting on the floor.
So we know... here's what we do. There is a couch involved.
Listen, you can't have...
There's not a couch involved.
Wait, I thought we did... No. I thought you were waiting...
Though many of us in the nation's capital could use some therapy, this is not a therapy show, so there will not be a couch.
What if Major was like the new Dr. Phil?
I want every one of your interviews from now on to start with, so how do you feel?
How do you feel about this?
If you could do that.
There's not a couch involved. Well, this is breaking news. I thought there was. Anyway.
So Major, the chair of the Fed, Jerome Powell, yesterday was talking about tariffs and basically said that this is going to drive us toward a recession. Unemployment is likely going to go up. And with that, the stock market did not react well. The president responded today by saying that Powell should be fired immediately. So what's been sort of the reaction in Washington today?
Well, okay. So the White House would beg to differ with your characterization of what the president put on social media. He said, and I quote, "Termination can't come soon enough." The White House says that's not a threat to fire the Federal Reserve Chairman, Jerome Powell. It's just something that is looking toward the calendar. Okay. People will interpret that as they will. And what Jerome Powell said yesterday is not altogether inconsistent with what he'd said a couple of weeks before, that the tariffs, as announced by the president, are larger than anticipated. And if they remain, and if this policy as articulated remains, two very big ifs, the very likely effects will be inflation, job losses, and a potential recessionary environment. He didn't predict a hard recession would come, didn't say it was inevitable. But they said there is something that everyone in the equity markets knows, which is policy uncertainty. People don't know, A, what the tariffs are for. And if you don't know what they're for, you don't know how long they're going to last. Let me give you two very quick examples. If tariffs are for revenue, meaning putting more money in the U.S. Treasury, then they have to be permanent. Or at least semi-permanent. At least they have to be a year or two, because if they aren't, then you're not going to get that much revenue. If they're a negotiating tool, then they're not for revenue, and no one knows how long they're going to last. And the administration, I don't need to tell you or your audience, sort of bounces back and forth on that. If they're for reindustrializing America, they also need to be permanent, because you can't have people make decisions about factories that need 2, 3, 4 years to build. I don't care what permits you waive, it still takes a while to build a factory. They're not going to make those decisions on reindustrialization, so-called, if they're not permanent. So the idea that they're negotiable undercuts that they're permanent, and that's what creates the uncertainty. So all Powell was doing is saying, I've heard what the president said. I'm not sure how long they're going to last, but if they are as advertised, we're heading toward inflation, fewer jobs, and quite probably a recession. Now, what President Trump, and this is why this matters, termination can't come fast enough. White House says, oh, no, no, no. He's not referring to terminating the head of the Federal Reserve, even though in this second time around, President Trump has fired lots of people who lead or are members of a quasi-independent agency, which the Fed is. So if he thinks he's empowered to fire all these other people, why wouldn't you assume he thinks he's powerful enough to fire the Federal Reserve chairman? That's why comments like that really rattle people. They're uncertain what he actually means and what his intentions truly are. That's why Washington and stock market is paying very close attention to this, and also why the White House very hurriedly went out through senior officials to tell CNBC, Bloomberg, and Fox Business and everyone else, oh, no, 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 he didn't mean that. Don't get too excited. He's just angry about high interest rates or interest rates that are higher than he would prefer them to be. But as the saying goes, watch this space.
Major, looking at the tariffs, the reciprocal tariffs, the 145% import levies on goods from China, and then the announcement that there'd be exceptions for the tech industry. Mm-hmm. In addition to the confusion, how concerned are you that what will happen is some of the exemptions that get carved out also happen to be major donors to the Trump campaign, where it looks like cronyism?
It's a serious issue. And I remember the days, I'm sure you do as well, when Sarah Palin went all over the country railing against crony capitalism. I remember those days. I was alive back then. It was only like 8 or 9 years ago. That was a central concern. And this goes back to something we've discussed before. Why was tariff policy always put in the hands of Congress? Because at least there, it had to go through a process that people could evaluate. It didn't have that power to either impose or reduce or erase a tariff wasn't in the hands of one person. Now, the president has claimed that power under emergency economic powers given to a president. But again, I ask the question, if it's an economic emergency, how can you pause it? We had this conversation last week, and this is central to this power the president is wielding. If it's an economic emergency, how do you pause it? Under what authority and under what credible means do you communicate to the country that this emergency is so dire, you alone have the power to execute this policy? Oh, but never mind. It's paused because I'm going to do something else. That's why this power to tax, which a tariff is, remember, a tariff is a tax, and the power to tax was placed in the hands of Congress intentionally by the founding fathers. And it's very high in the Constitution. One of the first things you learn in civics class when you're in junior high school, all tax policy originates in the House of Representatives. Why? Because that's what the Constitution says. When you operate outside of that, you invite all sorts of scrutiny. And one of the things that are being scrutinized is who benefits from exemptions or pauses or things being canceled. Well, it might be people who are very close to the president or who are trying to get close to the president. And that's playing out in full public view.
Major, this situation with Abrego Garcia, who was deported to El Salvador, even though the Justice Department said he probably should not have been, and then the Supreme Court said he should be brought back, essentially is what they said, or that the government had to facilitate it. It looks like he's not coming back. So you've seen Democrats sort of use this, and they've gone after this. There's also a question of whether or not this is messaging that they should be getting behind. As you see the entire situation, what's your overview of it?
So there's politics, and then there's due process. The politics all favors the White House right now because the White House is very clear. Guy's either a terrorist or a gang member or some combination of it. He was here illegally and he should be sent back to El Salvador, full stop, end of story. And they love the politics around that because it reinforces all of their zero tolerance for any illegal immigration in our country. that's the politics of it. And the White House loves it, wants to lean into it, wants to talk about it all day and night. The due process of it matters in this sense. Okay. The administration says Gilmar Abrego Garcia is first either a at first it said through the Vice President of the United States, he was a convicted gang member. That was a lie. A full-out lie. Gilmar Abrego Garcia has not been convicted of being a gang member in any jurisdiction, period. Then they said, well, he's probably a gang member because somebody said so in an immigration hearing. That somebody was an anonymous source that said he might be a member of MS-13. Okay, that's pretty thin gruel when it comes to evidence of gang membership. Then they said he's a member because MS-13 is a terrorist organization. He's a terrorist. Based on what? Well, because we said so. Well, based on what did you say it? Never mind. We just said it. Well, do you have any evidence? Well, we might, but we're not going to share it with you because we're going to enlist the State Secret Act because it deals with foreign policy and internal information related to terrorism. So we're not obligated to tell you what it is. Why does all this matter? If a government, any government, can label you something and never have to prove what that label means or how they arrived at that label for you, and you can never extricate yourself having been so labeled, and if labeled, you can be deported to another country and sent to a maximum security prison from which you can never escape, then we are in a very different place when it comes to due process, civil liberties, and the right guaranteed to those in this country to at least question a label applied to you that has legal consequences. Now, some in your audience might say, I don't care. He's from El Salvador. He entered the country illegally. He doesn't have any of those rights. As someone who applied to stay in this country legally, once entering it illegally, he had some of those rights. And my only point about this is, yes, the politics unalterably favor the White House. They love the politics about this. And sometimes due process cases like this don't land all that well politically. But that doesn't mean due process doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter a government, once seduced by the ability to label someone who's not popular, something that makes them easily deported and due process rights can be evaporated and erased. The temptation sometimes is to extend that authority in other places. And that's the danger here.
Major, I know this is a bigger question, but with what is going on right now with Harvard and the Trump administration, I believe, seeking to end its tax-exempt status.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of universities, right, do take federal funds, and mm-hmm. and a lot of times behind the scene, maybe a bit more adroitly or discreetly, the government does try to dictate a little bit about how the university conducts itself, whether it be with the Obama administration and Title IX or like the Solomon Amendment, which is pretty meek, saying, okay, federal funded universities have to allow military recruiters on campus. But this one seems to be bigger, more outright, more blatant. What is your thought on this case specifically? And then also this idea that universities receiving federal funding might have to bend a little bit to government dictates.
So in the case of the Solomon Amendment, which is about ROTC, mm-hmm. that's a free speech thing. That's a due process thing. Can I join a club or can a club come or the military come to recruit? Okay. If you're going to get federal funds, you ought to allow that. You can't ban that. And that's what that amendment's about. And yes, there's been a turning of the knobs with certain respects to federal law, accessibility and things like that. What the administration says is everything about Harvard and all these other universities is about anti-Semitism, making sure that Jewish students and Jewish faculty feel comfortable, not besieged, not harassed, not afraid of violence. That is a completely legitimate issue. It's consistent with federal law. Nobody disputes that. Harvard has tried to engage the administration on this, as many other universities have, about policies that they can review and decide if they're satisfied with or dissatisfied with. That's not what this is about with Harvard. Not even close. Read a Wall Street Journal editorial about this earlier this week. They're getting into everything else about Harvard, borderline everything but their curriculum. But even then, they're trying to exert some influence. So it's not about anti-Semitism at all. It's about how does Harvard hire? How does it review its students? Who gets in and who gets out? will they submit to an outside audit of all these things? That is essentially how a university operates. And they're using the threat of withholding federal billions of dollars of federal funds in order to get Harvard to buckle under. And Harvard uniquely said, no, we're not going to. And that's what this confrontation is about. Harvard is willing to fight this out in court. What the administration is trying to do is get people to comply without having to go to court, because they know in court they're probably going to, well, they should lose, because the federal government doesn't have these broad authorities as described for itself by the Trump administration. Harvard is the first to fight. I had on Ned Lamont, who's the governor of Connecticut, on my show last night, and he said Yale could be next. He wants Yale to do exactly what Harvard has done. If it comes, meaning the Trump administration, and demands things that are outside of the scope of federal law, resist, and resist aggressively. Harvard has, Yale may follow, other universities may now follow Harvard's lead. We don't know. But this is a clash that's not going away.
Major Garrett, we appreciate you as always, and we look forward to the arrival of the new couch for the set. Can't wait to see what it looks like.
What if it's floral, like a grandma couch?
I hope it is. Oh, Major, make sure there's plastic
on it.
Make sure there's plastic coverings. Okay. We'll have to order those now, I guess.
All right. I don't know why I thought it was a couch this whole time.
He
loves talking to us.
He does.
Okay. All right, guys.
Thanks, Major.
Chief Washington correspondent for CBS News. Right now, the show is called America Decides on CBS News 24/7, and there are some changes coming. We are looking forward to those. It's the Chris and Amy Show, 104.1 FM, KMOX. Going to give away some Battle Hawks tickets before the show is over, and you need to be listening for your chance to win. Speaking of that, we're going to talk to Battle Hawks receiver Gary Jennings. He'll be on the show. Coming up after the 11 o'clock news. We still have another hour to go. And then the Gas House Gang at 12. It will be Bernie Miklas and me. We're going to talk some Redbirds with you. Cardinals just won a series against Houston, and now they will play the Mets starting tonight. So I was looking at STLtoday.com before the show started, and I saw this headline, and it's a review of a restaurant from Ian Frobe.
Yep.
You know, longtime
food critic
for the Post-Dispatch. And I just thought this headline was very funny.
I can testify to this because he laughed out loud in his dark little corner.
Okay. Maybe it's not as funny as I think it is, but I think it's pretty good. So the headline is about a place called High Bar in Clayton. It says, High Bar in Clayton clears the low expectations for St. Louis hotel restaurants. It's like he's saying that every hotel restaurant in the entire area sucks.
Yeah, it's
so
super
High Bar is
snarky.
Better than that. That's really funny to me.
High Bar in Clayton clears the low expectations for St. Louis hotel restaurants. And I think to me what drives it home is that he specifies it's St. Louis hotel restaurant.
I know. It's so fun. And then he goes on to say, he's talking about this steak frites, which I love steak frites. And he's talking about it, and he said you could look up a photo, basically saying you could look up the photo on their website. However, you find out that the photo is a stock photo that he says, quote, you can find the exact same photograph accompanying such online articles as, what food should I avoid if I have type 2 diabetes? Like, I don't think he's trying to torch this place. And High Bar is at the AC Hotel in Clayton.
I don't think
he's trying to torch it, but it came off that way.
It was pretty funny. Well, I mean, the first line. I needed a good laugh. That's how he starts his story. If you are the owner of a restaurant, you don't want the food critic to start his profile of your restaurant with,
I need a good laugh.
I needed a good laugh. Not a rueful, borderline nihilistic chuckle. Those remain cheap and plentiful, free from inflation and tariffs.
Our hotel, and I don't eat at hotels in St. Louis. I just haven't. Are they bad? Are the restaurants bad? Generally?
I don't know. I'm always surprised when someone picks a hotel restaurant because I feel like is that a real restaurant? But there is a restaurant, I think it's the Hyatt place in Chesterfield, like Stony Creek or something, that I think is supposed to be pretty good.
I have no idea.
I don't know.
I should eat at more hotel restaurants, and I'll report back to you.
You get too full, you can just get a room and go upstairs and go to bed.
Battlehawks play coming up here on Saturday against Michigan. We're going to talk to Battlehawks receiver Gary Jennings on KMOX.